I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Christopher Prosperi, our senior contributor of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Producers Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Faith.
And you can tell your friends, no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world. That's many people do at WNPR.org. Okay, two things, everybody. The chocolate maker we talked about at Thorncrest Farm in Goshen, Connecticut, was overwhelmed with people after the Food Schmooze interview. And I tell you something, that's what makes me want to get up in the morning, to know that somebody who's doing great, great work gets a response. And so we're so excited for them.
They are doing great work.
Sold out, Angela. The yogurt, I mean, every single thing just wiped out.
Yeah,
yep. And then the story we did on the paleo lasagna at the Branford, Connecticut Meat House, a wild response there. The owner was telling me, I stopped in to get my paleo lasagna. He said, we even had a couple drive from Long Island to get this paleo lasagna. I hope they got a tray of it, because that's a long drive. All right. Here's what I would like to invite you to. This is a personal invitation, and it is one of the hottest scenes around. It's about 60 days away. I'm talking about my Food Schmooze Martini competition. You're invited to be a top judge, and CPTV is going to be filming. So that's a new twist. You taste at all the cocktail stations, and these are works of art in themselves. Every bartender seems to do something pretty innovative. And then you visit the food stations. You have a ballot in hand, and after you've tasted martinis at all these stations, then you get to vote. And at the end of the night, there's a great DJ, power station events. We're going to be, you know, everybody, we dance until all hours. And at the end of the night, we all rush in into the kitchen, and we start
tallying, counting,
and then we come out and reveal the martini king or queen of Connecticut and the Food Schmooze. So it is a sellout experience every time. If you still want to compete as a bartender, I think you can. But you are certainly invited to attend as a guest. How about this as a surprise invitation for Mother's Day, for Father's Day, for somebody's birthday, or just to say, I love you. You know, there is going to be... Well, never mind.
What's that?
There's going to be a surprise for me.
There is a surprise.
There's a surprise?
Yeah. So this is all to benefit WNPR and CPTV, of course, and the Food Schmooze. It's going to be Thursday, June 19th. As everybody knows, Thursday is the way to start the weekend. That's what I think.
That's right.
Thought that for a long time. So Thursday, June 19th. And it will be at gorgeous Riverview in Simsbury, Connecticut this time. Go online to ctmartini.org for tickets and information. Tickets are $65, and you must be 21 or older. And, of course, we encourage you to drink responsibly. There is a discount for designated drivers. A lot of people chip in for car service together, and crowds of people come in gangs. And we absolutely love that. So get your dancing shoes. That's ctmartini.org. And if you think I'm kidding about participation across the region, On 20, Rizzuto's, Tisane Euro Asian Cafe, Millwright's, Infinity Hall Bistro, Perk on Main, Firebox Restaurant, Eli Restaurant Group, Lime Grill, Quench Cafe, Spice Catering, Bar Taco, Plan B, The Cocktail Chemist, Barcelona, J. Christian's, Matthew's Restaurant, The Double Tree, Time Out Sports Bar, Max Burger, Bobby V's, The Inn at Middletown, Sal e Pepe, Apricots, Agave, Chamard Vineyards, Vinted, Pond House Cafe, Cuvée, Carbones, Esca, Luce, Rooftop 120, J. Gilbert's, Peppercorns, Ken Z. And I'm not done with the list.
Is this bigger than usual?
This
sounds
is
like
outrageous, and I hope everybody's excited about the TV part, because we are. We are really excited. Okay. How about somebody taste anything great I did? I was at Bar Boucher in Madison, Connecticut. It's this little French cafe. It is a relative of Union League Cafe in New Haven, the great French bistro. This is a tiny, intimate, you know, wonderfully designed space in Madison, just down from the green. And I had their foie gras burger. So this was a burger with very delicious, with a little slice of foie gras to cover the top of the burger. There you go. Some people have it with a bun. I had it just plain because I wanted to taste that foie gras.
Did it melt right in?
Oh, my gosh.
You
like
know how
butter.
Foie gras does that. So very nicely done, wow. Bar Boucher in Madison, Connecticut. Just wanted to say that. Should we go through our kitchen tips? This time we have cruised Cook's Illustrated magazine, so we thank them for these tips.
And this is a great tip, and this is something we use in professional kitchens all the time, and it's those anti-fatigue mats. But professional ones can cost upwards to $60 to $100. And this reader writes in that you can use a yoga mat for the same purpose. And it's anti-slip. It's a little cushion, so it gives you a nice little support, right?
Yeah.
That's
so
a great
this
idea.
That's a smart idea.
That is a smart idea.
And multi-purpose for that purpose for that yoga mat.
So if you're standing over your kitchen stove for a long period of time mixing risotto or something.
Or chopping.
Or washing the dishes. Yeah. I mean, here I have a dishwasher sitting there, and so often I'm washing my dishes. There must be something therapeutic about this for me.
I kind of like that. So you're in the yoga zen place.
There you are.
Because you're on the mat, and you're doing the dishes.
Okay.
I'm going to roll mine out in the kitchen
yoga.
When I get
the
home.
The new kitchen yoga. Okay. Here is also, they have a tip about storing extra eggs. Sometimes we want more than a dozen. It might be for a recipe or you've got a crowd to feed. You know, sure, you can stack one carton on top of the next, but if you have some left over. Well, Ken Burnham writes in from Florida to say that he will get a new carton of eggs before he's finished the old one. So to save space in the fridge, and if it doesn't fit on top, he places the new carton upside down on a shelf and then sets the older eggs in the inverted cups.
That's the same shape as the
So he knows which one without opening them is the older one and checking dates and all that. He sees them right out there. So
that's genius.
Isn't that
is.
Good?
Yeah.
I love that one. Okay, what have we got? Who we got? Lori, what do you have?
I have a tip about storing your silicone baking mat. A lot of people like to roll them up, but the problem is that they come unfurled. So Cynthia Kaufman from Silver Spring, Maryland, takes a clean dish towel that's at least the size of the silicone mat. And then she puts the mat on the flat surface of the clean dish towel. And then she starts to roll at the short end the towel over the mat. And then she tucks the ends of the towel into the tube. And that secures it. So now it's all set. And you can store your baking mats.
That's another good one.
Yeah.
And that holds it together, the little ends.
Nice. I didn't know you had to store them. I just keep them in the pan.
That's a good idea. So here's an extra way to store them. Anytime I have the end of wrapping paper, anything that provides one of those sturdy cardboard tubes, sometimes it's paper towels, I grab those and I store a few at a time because when I'm done with my silicone mat, I just roll it up and pop it inside the tube and then pull it out.
That's
so
a good one too.
Either way. Jonathan, what do you have?
I have one. It's very simple. For when your brown sugar dries out and clumps up, you can just simply break those clumps up with your coffee grinder.
This is also useful.
Yeah.
And you just take a clump and put it in the coffee.
Yeah, up to a quarter of a cup at a time will fit.
I wish I had known about that.
How much did you throw away?
All the time.
I keep thinking how much brown sugar I've thrown away.
Yes, thinking that it was no good anymore.
Anybody use that trick of putting it, we'll say, a piece of fruit or something?
To keep it moist. That's what.
You know what? Yeah. I thought it was crazy, and I thought there was no way it worked. And then Linda Juca showed it to me, and I was like, there's no way it works. And we actually took a thing that was totally hard, peeled an apple. And just put the apple peel in there. The next time I went to her house, she pulled it right out and it was all soft.
There, see, really? Another tip.
That's what I was like.
It turns out to be true.
It's true.
Okay, everybody's one-upping these people.
Yeah, right?
How about which fruit you can put in a paper bag with what other fruit that helps ripen it?
Ooh.
Does anyone know?
No, that one I got.
All right, I'm going to research that.
I didn't know that was a problem. I thought you could put them all in together.
You know how you go to the store and the pears are as hard as bowling balls and you have to wait? There are certain fruits that can go in a bag with other fruits. They give off a particular gas, and then that ripens all the fruit in the bag. So the question is, which ones? We're going to find out for you here on the Food Schmooze. Right. So here is our final tip from Cook's Illustrated. Tongs that you use for barbecue grill, I use them indoors at the stove constantly. And I love the tongs that are made with a silicone end so they don't scratch my pans if I'm using a nonstick pan. Well, in the drawer or in the dishwasher, no matter where it is, the little clip that makes those tongs stay together gets triggered somehow.
Boing.
And, you know, and it's all, things are all over the place. So I thought, what can I do? Well, someone came up with a great thing. They're spring-loaded tongs we're talking about. And sometimes they don't have a locking mechanism, never mind that it comes undone. So Eugene Parvin writes in from Illinois to say he saves the plastic ring off the container of orange juice or milk. You know, when you have one of those big pourable containers and you pull the top
ring
to get the top off the juice or the milk, there is a ring, and he uses that and slips it around the tool.
Wow.
Yeah.
He must have been sitting there with his tongs and the milk
jug. I know there's something I can do with this.
People are ingenious. Okay. Coming up, we have a book to tell you about. The women known as the Casserole Queens are going to be with us on the show. So we want to talk about one of the recipes from the book, which is chicken with 40 cloves of garlic. It sounds intense. It's actually gorgeous, lovely, because we're going to tell you what happens to the garlic when you bake it in the oven with that roast chicken. So we're going to get to that. But first, mandolins. I love the mandolin to slice up vegetables, to make eggplant parmesan, sliced potatoes. It's so quick, so easy. I've found actually that sometimes the more expensive ones that can be $100 to $300 are more trouble than they're worth. You have to disassemble them practically to clean them. They're hard to clean. Plus, who wants to spend that much money? So I was looking around and I started surveying who is testing these more inexpensive mandolins that can tell us. Well, Cook's Illustrated did it, and here are the best recommendations. These two, Swissmar, Swissmar. Swissmar. It's $29.99. And it has two different slices and two juliennes. And the other one is the Kyocera adjustable slicer. And even has a hand guard. And that has four different kinds of slices. $24.99. Great ease of use, great safety, great cleanup, great performance on those two. Swissmar and Kyocera, both $25 to $30. And I think that's great. And we have those posted at our website right now, along with our recipes that we're going to be talking about next at WNPR.org. Click on programs for the Faith Middleton Show, and of course you will see the Food Schmooze link. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. More mouthwatering conversation, including chicken with 40 cloves of garlic and a Bloody Mary meatloaf, and lots of fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
Shoe fly pie, an apple fan, thought he makes your eyes light off.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread.
Beans and cornbread had a fight.
Beans
knocked cornbread out of sight.
Beans.
Cornbread said, "Now that's all right.
Beans.
Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon. You can join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. WNPR's content director is Jim Cutie, and we thank you first and foremost for listening. A quick word, on May 1st, I will be interviewing on stage Chef Jacques Pepin. He is dean of the French Culinary Institute and author of more than 20 cookbooks and creator of 11 cooking shows. That will be at the Jewish Community Center of Greater New Haven. Tickets online, jccnh.org. Coming up on the show, we have the Casserole Queen's Make a Meal Cookbook. There are about 100 casseroles in here, salads, sides, and dessert. That would be Crystal Cook and Sandy Pollock, the aptly named Crystal Cook. And so we're going to get to, you know, lots of their recipes coming up, including the one that is on our, we've got two on the website right this minute. One is a spicy Bloody Mary meatloaf. It is fantastic.
I want to see that recipe.
Okay. Yeah. I made this last night. Fantastic. Yeah. Also, we just ate chicken with 40 cloves of garlic. That's on our website right now. WNPR.org. Click on programs to see the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. Okay. Here we go. Chris, chicken with 40 cloves of garlic. So simple. We're going to tell you how to do this. The idea, this is essentially, as I explained on the website, a chicken sitting on some vegetables, mm-hmm. and the chicken is stuffed with garlic cloves, and it's sitting on yet more garlic cloves. So
oh, boy.
40 in all. And you think, oh, that sounds frightening. That sounds, it's going to be too much. But let's talk about what happens to garlic when you roast it in a 325-degree oven, and you bake it for about 100, you know, the chicken for 100 hours, for 1.5 hours. So that's 1.5, 90 minutes.
Yeah.
It becomes so soft and sweet, this garlic.
And almost like a little nutty flavor to it, and that pungent garlic flavor that you get in the raw garlic mellows right out. And you can actually eat these. I smear them on toast.
Bread, yes.
That's what I do, too.
Oh, heaven.
And because they're very spreadable when you break into them, you could put them on a piece of baguette when you're at the table.
Heaven.
If you've got some vegetable with this, another vegetable, you could do something with that. You could save them and have them with something else, whatever you want to do. But let us tell you how easy it is to do chicken with 40 cloves of garlic. And let's discuss for 1 second, because where in the world did this recipe come from? I thought it was James Beard, because he's the first person that I remember
doing
this. And then I thought, where did he get this? Did he make this up?
That's interesting. Someone should tell us.
Yeah,
it has been around a long time.
Is this from the French countryside, Chris? Do we know?
I have no idea, but it has been around for a long time.
Was it a mistake? Did a farmer have tons of garlic left and keep tossing it into the recipe? Might as well use this. You know, is that the way this started?
Yeah, what was the thought? I mean, anyone who's eaten raw garlic would never put 40 cloves of garlic in any one dish.
Maybe it was supposed to be a punishment for somebody.
But we see why this recipe has stayed around, because it is so delicious. Every once in a while, you'll see this in a restaurant, and I always get it when I do, because I think, this is...
And this is probably the simplest version of it, or one of the simplest versions of it I've ever seen.
Me too. Yeah. So the oven is on at 325. You get a casserole dish and spray it with a little cooking spray. And then you combine some diced up onions, celery, tarragon, and parsley, and put those in the bottom of the casserole dish.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. I mean, I was like, do you sear it? Do you caramelize? No, you just take the vegetables, chop them up raw, and just put them on a nice layer on the bottom of a casserole
Spread
dish.
Them out.
Yeah.
And then you rub the chicken pieces with some olive oil and a little salt and pepper,
and
right,
that's
Chris?
It. Yeah. And then I was like, now let's go sear those. No, you don't even sear those. You just take those and you place them on top of your vegetables.
It just sits on there.
Yeah.
And here is, for me, the secret ingredient. And it's a little more interesting than wine in this recipe.
Yeah.
You drizzle the chicken with a little vermouth.
Yeah.
Right. If you're doing a whole chicken, you would put it inside the cavity. And if you're doing, as this recipe calls for, chicken thighs, which is the best part of the meat as far as very moist, then you sprinkle it all around.
Yeah, it's so easy. Now, so you can do either or. You could do a whole chicken. You can do chicken parts. You could do chicken legs, whatever type of chicken you like or you have, you can do with this recipe.
We like this thighs because this cooks very, very quickly. That's what keeps this so simple. Mm-hmm. So it's got that drizzle of vermouth if you are someone who can have alcohol. And then you tuck the garlic in and around the chicken. You cover the casserole with a little foil and crisp.
That's it. Put it in the oven. You know what the funny part is? Because I know this recipe has been around forever, but my young cooks in the kitchen kept looking at me like, you're not going to put it. Because I had the garlic in a big bowl. Because 40 cloves of garlic,
garlic.
40 cloves of garlic when it's sitting in a bowl, it's not like you see that every day for one recipe, right? That's like, you know, enough for like 2 days.
But is there a ratio? Do you need a certain, is it 40 cloves per 25 pieces of
I'd
chicken.
I'd say always have
it's
more.
It's just a famous recipe.
So it doesn't matter if you had 4 pieces of chicken or 24. Totally. It's 40 cloves
40
of garlic.
Yeah,
because
garlic
those leftovers, like face
would
those,
handle anything.
And those leftovers or garlic cloves you can smear on toast or whatever.
Just pop them back to reheat them after if you're storing them in the refrigerator. Pop them back in the microwave for a few seconds and you're good to go. Hey, if you are peeling 40 cloves of garlic, that's a lot of garlic to peel. And one of the things you can do is just pop it in the microwave for a few seconds and that loosens up the skins and it comes right off. Chris, you have another trick?
Yeah. You buy them already peeled. I know everyone's going to say you don't. I do. I haven't peeled garlic in years.
So do you get the one in the container or with the liquid?
No, just the jar, plain. They're a little milder because they're, you know,
they've lost some pungency.
So use 46.
Oh.
Do you want to peel 40 cloves of garlic? Do you know your finger? It gets – you know why I stopped and people are like, you're crazy.
I actually do want to.
It gets under your fingernails and that is torture to me. The peelings – I can't do it. I can't even look at it anymore. So, yes, buy peeled garlic. I'm good with it.
Okay. Well, Jacques Pepin says, use the supermarket as your prep chef.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a little bit more expensive. So we should add if you can afford to do that.
And now I'm going
to
get all the letters. I can't believe you use peeled garlic.
So chicken with 40 cloves of garlic. And no wonder people run when I come into the room. I must be like a walking garlic because I do stand around and
peel the garlic.
40 cloves. But the microwave helps a lot. It slips right off. So there you go.
Have you seen that device, the hose? It's a little piece of hose, and you just take one clove of garlic. That one I can do. And then you take the glow, and then you just roll it on a table, and you pop it.
It looks like a little cannoli made out of silicone. Yeah. And you stick the whole garlic
clove It works.
Takes
but
the peel
I
right
will
off.
Outperform you with my jar of peeled garlic.
Yes, you will. Okay.
As it falls out of the jar.
However, this garlic does not have to be minced or cut in any way. These are whole cloves. So after you do the peeling, that's it. That's the labor-intensive part. And I'm with doing it fresh. I so understand, Chris, what you're saying. And if I was racing through, maybe I would do that. But I'm with doing it fresh because it is got some kind of intensity, that not in a bad way, but in a beautiful, beautiful way. Okay, here's the other thing about this recipe. It is gluten-free, and it is diabetic-friendly.
Yeah.
You won't see any sugar in here. Really, the ingredients are some onions, some celery, dried tarragon, some chopped fresh parsley, the chicken thighs, some drumsticks, or you could do all thighs, a little bit of olive oil, salt and pepper, a half a cup of the dry vermouth. You could use sherry or you could do dry wine if that's what you have around. I think it's a little bit more interesting with the vermouth. And then the 40 cloves of garlic and you're good to go. It's not a ton of things to get.
It is a classic here in this country now. I think we can put it up there, right, with chicken marabella from the Silver Palate. I mean, there are a few dishes that have lasted all through our time, right? These American – what are, I guess, now are American classics. That has to be one of them. I'm sure it's not from here, but it's been made here enough where we can take part ownership in it, I think, now.
We're going to go next to the casserole queens, but I want to alert you to something. We're going to have a kind of round-robin discussion after this conversation coming up with all these great recipes, including the spicy Bloody Mary meatloaf. It is fantastic, along with this chicken with 40 cloves of garlic. So they're at our website right now, WNPR.org. Just search programs for the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. Okay, we're going to talk with the casserole queens. I want to alert you that in the next segment, we're going to be also talking, if we have time, I'm going to try and save some time, hydroponic growing. This is growing vegetables in water solution instead of soil. What does that mean for us? We're going to get into it because we're seeing more and more of this. Is it as healthy for us? You know, there are lots and lots of benefits. Are there any drawbacks? And, you know, Chris has actually tried this in the basement of his house. And so I can't wait to hear about this. We've talked about this once before. All right, here we go. I would like you to meet Crystal Cook and Sandy Pollock. They are the Casserole Queens. This is the Casserole Queens Make a Meal Cookbook. 100 casseroles, salads, sides, and desserts. And immediately I'm turning to the recipe, and it is on the website right now, along with chicken with 40 cloves of garlic. And this is bacon-wrapped meatloaf, but the key here is that you make a spicy Bloody Mary mix using their recipe. We have this posted right now, WNPR.org. Just search programs, and you'll see the Food Schmooze link. And it is so good. And you use a certain amount in this recipe, like a half a cup, I think, and then for the meatloaf. And then, of course, you're making a pitcher, and so you get to drink the rest with your friends. So whether it's alcohol-free or with alcohol, yeah, whatever you want to do. Okay, so welcome to the Food Schmooze, you two, Crystal and Sandy.
Thank you. We definitely said we're happy to make a pitcher.
Yeah, I wish we were together. Let's talk about, let me just whip through a little bit of bacon here, some of the usual suspects, some ketchup, balsamic vinegar is a different twist, a little red pepper flakes, and also this homemade spicy Bloody Mary mix, and some eggs are always in there, some garlic. You've got breadcrumbs and parsley and dried oregano, salt and pepper, ground beef in this with a little mozzarella and grated Parmesan cheese. So cheese in this particular meatloaf recipe, we're going to leave it to our listeners to follow the favorite meatloaf recipe that they want and then add your spicy Bloody Mary mix. So let's talk about how that gets made.
Well, I mean, it comes together very quickly. It all kind of happens in a blender. But the one thing that I would like to say about this whole recipe is one thing that you'll find about us is that we love our spice. Like any opportunity that we get to kick it up and put some little bit of a Texas twist and get some spice in there, we're going to do it. So we live and breathe by spice. And that was kind of what resonated with us when we were going into this recipe. Is like, all right, we got to have some spice in this bad boy, so let's do this. And the Bloody Mary mix just really kind of speaks to us because, one, we like a good cocktail, too, so it all kind of worked together.
All right, so we have tomato juice, some fresh lime juice, I love that, some fresh lemon juice, garlic cloves, Old Bay seasoning, very traditional, prepared horseradish. Some people will use fresh, but you can certainly use prepared, Worcestershire sauce, salt and pepper, and there you go. So some other things for the drinks themselves, but this is the basis for the cocktail, and all in the blender, right?
All of it goes into the blender, yeah. I mean, it's very straightforward. You just want to make sure, you know, you get it into where you can suck it out of a straw. You want all this to go into a straw. But other than that, it's super quick, and it really does add just a really lovely kick to the dish.
Yeah, and you can hear from the complexity of this with the Old Bay seasoning and the Worcestershire and the horseradish. When you're making drinks, you folks use pepper vodka, I know, so I know you love your spice. But you can see that this, now a half a cup of this goes into the meatloaf mixture and gives it that wonderful flavor.
A half a cup just really evens it out because we still have, you know, we've got the ketchup and everything in there, which is still, you know, very traditional. This is just that one little more kick that just kind of makes everybody go, oh, hey, that's nice.
Okay. Very, very quickly, I wanted to talk with you about, I've been reading Middle Eastern cookbooks recently and fascinated with some things I didn't really know about. And then I see one in here that you've got, which is shakshuka. And this is gluten-free, this is diabetic-friendly, and it's vegetarian. And describe essentially what this is.
Oh, this is my favorite dish. This is Crystal. And I am obsessed with this dish. It's got so much flavor and so much kick. Just the little bit, again, a little bit of heat from the jalapenos and the tomatoes and the smoked paprika. It just makes it really, really flavorful. But you're basically just creating a tomato broth that you actually poach eggs in. And it is fabulous. Super simple to pull together, but yet very impressive and good for guests.
Yes. So this is olive oil, jalapenos, shallots, garlic, smoked paprika, ground cumin, which I think is, you know, the starring health ingredient, cayenne pepper, and a can of crushed tomatoes. And you end up poaching the eggs in this.
And then serving it with the eggs? Oh,
yes.
That sounds wonderful.
Yes, the eggs poach right up, and then, you know, there you go. It comes to the table like that, right in the pan in Middle Eastern culture.
And the eggs just
with the eggs
floating in. Oh, my gosh.
Poached in the tomato sauce.
Sunday morning with
the
Bloody Mary.
It would go great with a Bloody Mary.
So we're going to get to your summertime tomato basil pie That season is going to come, I promise. We're going to get to Aaron's special gluten-free corn dog casserole. I have never had a corn dog, and I can't wait to try this. We're going to do the mashed potato pizza, which is really, really fun. A tuna tomato bake. I love to take tuna and fry it or bake it. And I'm talking here about canned tuna, so it's really fun. And so on and on we go with the Casserole Queens. This is their Make a Meal cookbook, and our recipes continue right now. You can go online to see Chicken with 40 Cloves of Garlic or the Spicy Bloody Mary Meatloaf, WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. We're going to take a short break. Please support your local food growers and food makers. More delicious conversation after this quick break. Please stay with us.
You say potato, I say patata. You say tomato, I say Creole tomato. Oh, let's call the whole thing off. Along, killing the song, making it long gone. I was alone, breaking it off, making it soft, touching the road home. Sear it like a vegetable, scarf it like a vegetable, match it like a vegetable. Dip it like a vegetable, fry it like a vegetable.
I'm Faith Middleton, and I'm with the gang. This is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. That's FaithWNPR. And to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. We are talking with Crystal Cook and Sandy Pollack, and they are authors of the Casserole Queens Make a Meal Cookbook. And we're going to turn to zucchini lasagna. And this is gluten-free. It is diabetic-friendly because in place of, this is like the paleo lasagna we were talking about on the show last time. This uses thinly sliced zucchini in place of the noodles. Tell us how this one's done.
Well, I mean, it's very straightforward. You know, you cut your zucchini as much as possible to make it as thin as possible. And what it does is that really takes over your lasagna noodles. And that's what makes this gluten-free. And it's so delicious and fresh tasting, like it's come out of the, you know, the garden. And it's just a really nice, bright, great twist to a traditional, you know, pasta-made lasagna. And so, you know, very simple, straightforward with the onions and the red pepper flakes. Well, you know us, we got to have a little kick in there. And then, you know, you have the ground turkey, which you can add that, or you can go vegetarian by adding some sort of like a, you know, like a ground meat substitute, or you could omit it altogether if you wanted to go no meat. But it all layers very, very cleanly into a baking dish, and off you go. It could not be more simple.
And you're using, for the whole recipe, you're using about a cup of part skim ricotta. So you can add that, not add that, but I think that would be delicious. So there you go. If you're someone who's eating dairy, if you're paleo-friendly, you're not. So you could use almond meal, as our buddy from the Meat House does. Anyway, a zucchini lasagna. That is a great one. I want to turn, as promised, to summertime, because I promise it is coming. Tomato basil pie. You can make your own pie crust. You have a recipe here for one. But you can also buy the pie crust. And Chris Prosperi's trick is to take the store-bought, and I think everybody has agreed that we like the Pillsbury one.
Yep, totally.
And
yeah.
Chris, you're saying?
Roll it out just a little bit. So you take it, unroll it, put it on a work surface with a little flour, and just roll it a little bit thinner. I don't think anyone can tell it wasn't homemade.
Okay.
I think you're right.
So we've got a casserole dish lined up. We've got the pie dough rolled out if it is store-bought. So essentially, how are we layering?
This pie comes together super easy, too. I mean, that's the one thing that we try to do is just make recipes accessible and easy for folks and just use really good fresh ingredients, but we also encourage people to do what they can. We just want people to get back around the table. So if you do have to use, you know, some convenience products, we totally understand and don't ever hesitate. But this one really does celebrate the beautiful flavors of summer. So we do think everything that you use in here should be fresh as possible, because it's just really bright and crisp. But you just are really just taking tomato slices, putting it on top of the crust. You're putting in the basils and onions and mixing it well. And you're just layering it with the yogurt and goat cheese on top of it. And you're just simply baking it. And it's really easy to put together. I mean, it's just beautiful, simple, delicious flavor.
Doesn't that sound good? Imagine, you know, people coming over and you come out with this pie, this tomato basil pie, and what an appetizer if people are having drinks to start out. Is that the best? I think that is the best.
I want it to be August now.
I know. Yes. How can
that
we,
means it's over.
This is why we have to talk about hydroponic. Okay, Aaron's special gluten-free corn dog casserole. Oh, I was saying earlier, I've never had a corn dog.
Ever.
And I am a cornbread nut, so I don't know how I missed this. But so tell me about this.
So this recipe is actually based off of one that we had on our menu for our Austin business, which is just a corn dog casserole, you know. And so if you've not had a corn dog, I'd like to give you a hug and say I'm sorry, because they're delicious, you know. And I feel like we need to have a counseling session and maybe get you a corn dog today sometime. But if you have had a corn dog and you know that flavor that comes with it, this really does mimic it. You would be so surprised when you dig into it. You're like, it really does taste like a corn dog. But, and there's a few veggies in there which can trick you and make it a little bit healthier for you.
Let me just say the ingredients and then you just explain. So we've got a little bit of butter, celery, green onions, hot dogs, whole milk, eggs, gluten-free cornbread mix. You could get it from Bob's Red Mill, for instance. Chopped fresh sage and some shredded sharp cheddar cheese. So how do the hot dogs work in here?
You just cut them up and you fold them into the mix. It's just that straightforward. They're just kind of chopped up within the mix into like maybe...
But wait, I have sautéed them first, right?
Yeah, right. Starting from the beginning, you just got your celery and your onions, sauté those in a sauté pan, and you're going to have that good residual flavor from that once you're done. Then you're going to stick those hot dogs in there and also give them a really good browning as well. You don't want to bite into something that doesn't have a little bit of texture to it. So this gives a nice little bit of texture to it. Makes you kind of realize that they're in there and they don't all kind of have a similar texture, which is always kind of troubling in casseroles. You have to really watch textures because things can cook down and just seem like a big pile in there. So you want to make sure you have stuff that you can differentiate through in every single bite. And so that's part of doing that. And then the whole rest of it is you make your corn dog mix, you know, the milk, the eggs, the cornbread mix, and all of your great spices together. Mm. Then mix in your initially celery and onion that you initially sautéed and your hot dog and fold all those together, put them in a prepared pan, and off you go. And it makes the house smell good, smells like a carnival, and everybody smiles.
That
love
sounds
what a
crazy.
Great idea.
Good
corn
to
dog
me.
In a bowl.
Crazy. Absolutely wonderful. Ah. So mashed potato pizza. It took me a minute to understand that you were calling for a no-crust pizza. We have done this with ground beef, and so here it is. You're doing the same thing. This is gluten-free because you're using mashed potatoes as the crust. Talk about this, if you would.
In my house, I can never make just a little bit of mashed potatoes. I only know how to make enough mashed potatoes to feed a whole entire army, so I always have leftover mashed potatoes. And this is just kind of a fun way. We were really trying to incorporate a lot of gluten-free friendly recipes into this book and just provide simple substitutions. And actually, the potatoes, when you press it down and pre-bake it, really makes a nice crust for the pizza base. Like, you can actually literally cut into it and serve it and eat it like a piece of pizza.
So that, you put the mashed potatoes in the bottom of this casserole dish that has been brushed with olive oil. That does bake, and it gets that brown crust. And then you cover that crust with the chopped broccoli, tomatoes, cheese, and bacon. And then you bake your so-called mashed potato pizza for about 15 minutes more, till the cheese cheese has melted, put some sprinkle some green onions on there, slice it up and serve.
That's yum.
That sounds
isn't that
great.
Good? Yeah.
Oh my gosh,
yeah.
Leftover mashed potato use number
these
one.
Are like, yeah. or to make them for this purpose, that's another thing. Well, listen, we have loved talking with you. Thank you so much for your work. I know people who are gluten-free are probably really happy that you've included so many of those recipes in the book. Thank you both.
Thank you so much. Y'all have a good one.
Crystal Cook and Sandy Pollack, author of The Casserole Queen's Make a Meal Cookbook. It is in paperback, and we have a couple of their recipes right now at our website. We have chicken with 40 cloves of garlic that comes together so fast, one of the easiest of recipes of this type that we've seen, and we just finished eating it, and it is so good. And also, I highly recommend the other recipe we have up there from the book, which is a spicy Bloody Mary meatloaf with a little bit of bacon in there. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. So that's at WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. So now, as promised, let's get into I'm with Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, producers Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol. Let's get into hydroponic growing. This is growing of vegetables and herbs without soil. It's done in a water solution. And, you know, things are put into the water just as you would put things into the soil to amend the soil, to make it even healthier and friendly to the seeds and the plants. And so, Chris, how does hydroponic work?
Yeah, I mean, I did it and I kind of enjoyed the process. You start with the solution. So the solution is water and then two different types of fertilizer to add nutrients to the water. And then you can do this, and this is the fun part for me, is you can do this in many different ways. There are actual trays that you can do it in. And there's also a system that this is the one I had, which is a vertical system. So basically it starts with a pot on the bottom where you put your solution, and then it has a pipe that runs straight through three pots that are stacked kitty corner on top of each other.
Oh, wow.
And then it's basically – it pumps three or four times a day, and you can set this, that solution through, and you plant in perlite. That's those little like styrofoamy kind of balls that sort of hold the solution. And it pumps three to four times a day, and you put your seed in there, and it actually just starts growing. So it gets all the nutrients that it needs from this solution.
You did it in your basement, and you used a grow light.
And I did a grow light because I did it in the middle of the winter. But I know a lot of people that have the same thing that I do, and they do it outside in the summer.
Hmm. And is the taste – first of all, what's in the solution is what concerns me. So,
yeah, I mean, these are fertilizers. These are chemical fertilizers, so there's an issue.
Well,
taste.
I bet you could look up online to find out – whether there is a, let's say, non-poisonous.
Oh, sure, there is. And I've seen, but then there's other issues because I explored going that route. There's other issues with mildews and different things that you have to, it's very complicated to keep that solution, what they call balanced. So, I mean, I guess the chemical way is the easiest way, but there are other ways. And this is, I don't know if you remember.
It's like having an aquarium.
Yeah, well, this is what we were talking about, and this is the path I was going to go. And one of my friends told me about it is if you raise fish in water, in that tub, and you could do this quite easily. Edible fish would be great, like tilapia or trout or something like that. And you would feed the fish in that solution, right? Or in that water, just be water. And then you would feed the fish, and then the fish would actually add nutrients to the water. And then you would have a whole kind of ecosystem in your house.
They actually sell fish bowls that are planters on top.
Yeah,
just
see?
For, yeah.
That's
huh.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about. So that adds more of a natural nutrient to it. But I don't know. Now, listen, in December and January when I was growing this and I had little grape tomatoes and basil and arugula and little lettuces coming out of it, it was really nice. But I always find it lacks a couple things. One, it lacks the flavor that you get when you grow things in good soil.
Yeah,
right?
So something's missing in terms of intensity.
Intensity, and also in the structure of the leaves. Like you can tell, like if you pay attention to when you're in the grocery store and you see basil, especially this time of year, you'll see the leaves are sort of thinner. They're a paler green, almost like a lighter kind of green, and they're a little thinner and they're a little like flimsier. And then you go to your garden or even your window box where you're growing basil in the summer, and you see that it's a dark, rich green. I mean, it can be the same seed even. So there's definitely something that is lost, lacking. Is lacking when you do hydroponics. But on the other side of it, if you don't, and I think this is the great thing about hydroponics, if you can't grow, and then we're talking about big food systems, if you can't grow in soil in places, like we were talking earlier about NASA doing a lot of research with this, and you can, I go to Epcot Food and Wine Festival every year, and there you can actually see them in the many different ways they do hydroponics for the International Space Station. Right, a place where you don't have a lot of soil or any, but you have water and you can make these solutions. And they're talking about like on.
Why don't they compost up there?
Yeah, why don't they compost up there? Yeah,
yeah, your banana peels or whatever.
Yeah, you're and then growing that. Well, yeah. But it's an interesting
your
way
freeze
of growing.
Dried banana peels. But all right.
What I'm thinking about right now is dried mushroom powder. You know, there are some people who put dried mushroom powder that has been made in an organic facility into the garden soil. And it does, as I'm told, quite amazing things for the production of a plant. And I'm very interested in the sort of long, long tradition of using mushrooms and mushroom powder medicinally through many cultures, especially Chinese culture. So I'm wondering, I wonder what happens if you put mushroom powder into the water. So I'm just curious, you know, would that give you a more vibrant leaf? Would it help in some way? How do you get the minerals? Already we're noticing that the soil does not contain the kinds of minerals and nutrients that it used to contain, you know, a century ago. And so we're trying to figure out how to replace that in a healthy way. How do we make the water as nutrient and mineral-filled as possible?
Without using those chemical substitutes,
poison.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there are a lot of – the cool thing is if you go online, there's a lot of websites dedicated to this kind of growing and stuff. And you can see people experimenting with doing it the organic way.
Huh. Well, and what about pests? Do you get pests?
Well, I didn't get pests because I was growing in the basement. Now, my friend who grows outside, you're susceptible to just all the pests that you get in any growing outside. So that doesn't help with that at all. But I mean, again, there's organic ways of treating that and non-organic ways of treating that.
Well, it must be easier to keep the rabbits out of your garden, I would say.
Yeah, especially mine. Mine's vertical, right? So mine is tall.
And you don't have to water.
You never have to water. It's self-watering, so there's
no. So in nature, leaves absorb water, and I want
so
you
some
don't,
of that. I'm sure.
Don't need to water.
No, I think when we do it outside, I remember reading through, and I haven't done it in years, but I remember reading through the instructions. When you're doing it downstairs, you have to. That's when you set the water to do. When you do it inside, you want to set the water to do 3 or 4 times a day. But when you do outside, like if you're in the summer, and you can set that timer to only do the water a couple times a day, so you don't need as much watering.
Fascinating. Yeah. I'm going to look into this online.
I will let you have my vertical grow garden to experiment with here
now.
Because
I'm
like done with
it.
It's fun. It was really fun to do. And I started to think maybe, and that you have to give it back to me by the winter. Maybe I will try the fish thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
I'll give you some mushroom powder.
And then we'll try the organic.
And let's see what happens. Yeah.
It's a fun experiment.
Giant.
And I'll give you a website too. It's called
Soylent Green.
But I'll give a website. It's called vertigrow.com. And vertigrow is the company where I got my vertical pots. And you can see all the different kinds of systems they have. And they're expensive, kind of. They're like $100 to $200 for these systems and stuff, but they're fun to play with.
Oy.
That's what I was saying. If you remember the first time we talked about it, I had my $200 salad.
Yeah.
Right. Tomatoes.
Did you only get one salad out?
No, I got a couple salads, but it was a $200 bowl.
$100 salad.
That was like my $500 corn from my garden. It was in my inedible $200 lettuce.
But it was fun. You know, sometimes you do things just to see if you can do them, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, Jonathan, quickly, you looked this up online for us. I really appreciate that. The origin of chicken with 40 cloves of garlic?
Yeah. Nobody knows for sure, but they think Catalonia. And I think medieval times, years ago or so.
See, remember that time we were guessing years of things? Right. I would have been
it's
right
your
this
turn
time.
Now, yes.
Yeah, right. 1,000 years ago.
Slightly older than James Beard. But, yeah.
Slightly.
Oh, great! Great to be with all of you as always. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m. Saturdays at noon. We're online anytime. Find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines, easy cocktails we feature right now. Chicken with 40 cloves of garlic plus spicy Bloody Mary meatloaf at WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats. when they come to mind.